You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
As the economic crisis both deepens and spreads, there's renewed debate of capitalism and how it works. In the 19th century, this was the focus of classical economics, and of course, it was the central concern of Karl Marx. The first pages of his most famous book, Capital, begin with a discussion of commodities, their exchange, their value, and the mysteries of money. To discuss this and subsequent 20th century efforts to build a socialist alternative to capitalist dynamics, we've contacted Michael Leibowitz. He's a professor of economic history and author of several books on Marx and on 21st century efforts to construct a socialist alternative. Good morning, Michael, and welcome back to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Good
morning, Mordecai.
I mentioned that Marx begins his famous book with a discussion of commodities. Why does he start there?
Well, I think the first thing, before even dealing with that, we have to ask, why did Marx write Capital? And he wrote Capital because he viewed capitalism as a perverse, destructive economic system which destroys human beings and natures. And so his purpose in writing it was to give people a weapon to understand the nature of capitalism so they wouldn't just struggle for higher wages or shorter work days or reforms, but would see the necessity to put an end to capitalism. So then why start with a commodity? Well, there are two reasons I'd identify. One is, take the first sentence of Marx's book, Capital. It says, wealth in societies dominated by capitalism appears as an immense collection of commodities. Now, why is that significant? I think it's significant because for Marx, real wealth was human capacities. He spoke about rich human beings, a rich individuality of people able to develop all their sides intellectually, physically, you know, to develop as full-sided human beings. So imagine the horror to talk about and describe a perverse society in which wealth appears not as a human wealth, not as real wealth, but as commodities. That everything in the society appears as commodities and money, and human beings disappear in that process. So that's one reason why, you know, it's very significant to start with commodities. The second reason is the characteristic of capitalism is that workers sell their ability, their capacity to work, to perform, to capital as a commodity. Well, what does that mean? What happens when you have a commodity, when you sell a commodity to someone else? Well, to start with, the concept of a commodity implies separation. It implies separation of people. When people work together, there's no sale of a commodity. When there's a combination of people, there's no exchange of commodities. People may exchange their activities, but they're not exchanging things. When we care for other people, for example, care for children, there's no concept of a commodity there. The commodity presupposes that we're separate as people, and that we are separate, self-seeking people. I will give you this if you give me that. And that separation is reproduced through the process of commodity exchange. Now, what happens when you sell a commodity? When you sell a commodity, you relinquish all your claims, all your rights to it, and the owner, the person who has purchased it, has the right to do whatever he wants with it. And that's what happens when you sell your capacity as a commodity to the capitalist. The buyer, the capitalist, can do whatever he wants with your labor. And the effect is, several effects Marx identified. One is you have no rights to the products of your labor, and that certainly will affect, you know, the distribution of income. And secondly, you work under the direction and control of the capitalist. And Marx described this process of working under the direction and control of the capitalist as one in which there is a destruction and crippling of human beings. So rather than rich human beings, people able to develop their capacities within capitalism, what you have is the production of poor human beings. Because there's separation of thinking and doing, there is the mind and hand become increasingly separated. So capitalism produces this double defeat for working people. It exploits them on the one hand, but it also deforms them. And there's a reason, it's not an accident, because capital is interested in only one thing. The capitalist is interested in only one thing, profits, money, the growth of capital. And capital never sleeps. It's always trying to find ways for capital to grow. The best way to think about capitalism and capital is think of it as a cancer, constantly growing, constantly attempting. Capitalists never sleep, and in this process, human beings and nature are destroyed. And that's why Marx saw it as necessary to put an end to capitalism, not simply to engage in reforms.
From your discussion and your metaphor of cancer, I take it hidden in that is the argument that capitalism turns more and more of life, in fact, everything imaginable, into a marketable commodity. We see rainwater being privatized. We see human organs being bought and sold. Are these just exceptions, or they're really simply symptomatic of a general pattern?
It's the logic of capital to turn everything into a commodity. Not just a commodity which can be sold and which can be the source of profits. It's not just simply an exchange between two equal individuals. Capital is always looking to expand, and it does that. When capital is successful in defeating working people, capital moves into every area, the body, every possible element, that can become a source of profits becomes a source of profits, and that's why you have to recognize that these are not accidents, and you have to struggle against them.
Now, as you've explained, Marx is always trying to get beyond appearances, the commodity as an appearance, money as an appearance, to see the social realities, the social relations between groups of people and how that results and shapes the economy. What, as an alternative, is your vision of social relations that would be free of the injustices of this pattern of commodification of life?
Well, we have to understand capitalism. That's very important. And we need to reinvent socialism, a socialism with human beings at the center. And that's what I talk about in my book, The Socialist Alternative, Real Human Development. It's important to have a vision. And I think that the characteristics of that vision are, if we think about them, can be seen quite clearly. Hugo Chavez of Venezuela described it, what he called the socialist triangle, three elements. The social ownership of the means of production as one element. Why should some people be the owners, the possessors of all human heritage, of all of our social heritage? They are because they are the human heritage is the result of exploitation, that they have it because people have been exploited in the past. So social ownership of the means of production is central. Production organized by workers. Democracy in the workplace, democracy in communities, because production doesn't only occur in a specific workplace. And that kind of democracy in practice as protagonism is, in fact, essential for developing, human capacities, for developing rich human beings. So workers' councils, communal councils, I think is at the core of an alternative to capitalism. And furthermore, not a third side, being building a society in which we relate as members of a community rather than being self-oriented, I'll give you this only if you give me that. But all those three sides of a socialist triangle are informed by a focus on human development, of how people can develop all their capacities.
the 20th century was filled with efforts to build socialist alternatives, in some way having elements that that you've just mentioned. Why do you think then that they were not successful in in realizing that vision of an emancipated world?
Well, what they did was they ended private ownership of the means of production, you know, at their outset, you know, and created state ownership of the means of production. And they created in these societies a kind of a social contract in which we will ensure education, we will ensure health, we will ensure a basic standard of living, but in return, you will have no voice. You will have no power within the workplace. You will have no power within the community. That was the nature of the social contract there. And what happened was complete alienation on the part of workers who didn't care what they produced, anything that they produced, because they were being alienated in the process of production. They wanted simply to possess things. Money was important for them in order to buy things. That's the kind of people produced in a process of production where the total domination is from the top down. So that was certainly a source of problems in the attempts to build socialism. There were some differences in Yugoslavia where they had both state ownership of the means of production, but also workers' councils making decisions in individual workplaces. But one of the problems in Yugoslav market self-management was, it was a market-oriented society, but it focused on self-interest, the self-interest of particular workplaces, all the workers in a particular workplace against all the other workers. And in that situation, that focus on self-interest rather than trying to build a community and, you know, planning from below, in that situation, what you had was the disintegration of worker management, because it was, if all we're interested in is income, let's listen to the experts. So those in the workplace, it was the managers who took up, you know, who made the basic decisions, and the workers' councils were simply, you know, rubber stampers. And furthermore, there was the growth of inequality, which is characteristic of market, you know, economies. The self-interest and the lack of focus on solidarity within the society infected both the social ownership and also worker, you know, management within the production. So, you know, this is, I think, a core question of the necessity to deal with the focus on trying to build solidarity within the society, and also trying to ensure that there are the institutions within the society, like workers' councils and communal councils, that make real decisions and allow people to develop. And I think that's, for example, at the moment, that's an important question in the reforms and discussions occurring in Cuba, because in Cuba, they've run into great limits into the existing model, which was a state-dominated model, but they're looking to, in fact, move toward the market, but they're not talking about building solidarity from below, and they're not talking about worker management, although some people are, and that's the current, you know, I think, crossroads that Cuba is in at this moment. So I think, you know, we have to see what the inadequacies of the, you know, 20th century attempts were. We have to learn from them, and we have to build and reinvent socialism. And I think this is a time to do that, you know, in everywhere, to create this, you know, and develop a new vision of socialism, because everyone can see that now that their capitalism is not working. Capitalism is destroying people and nature, and the first thing that a Marxist would say is we have to recognize none of this is accidental, and none of this is going to change by little reforms, like changing the distribution of income, making, you know, 1% now 2%, you know, or 5% or 10%. That's not going to change, you know, the system, or making some little reforms, or adopting new forms of money. Those things are, you know, don't change the essence of the system, which is this destructive, perverse system, you know, which is driven by the desire for profits. So, you know, I think one of the lessons from Marx is we can't You know, he spoke of this at one point about workers' struggles for higher wages. He says workers have to, these struggles are important. Now, all these struggles against capital are important, but workers have to stop simply focusing on guerrilla, you know, warfare against the effects of capitalism. They have to end capitalism.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
Okay, pleasure. Good luck. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Michael Leibowitz. He's an emeritus professor of economics at Simon Fraser University and author of several books on Marx and on 21st century efforts to construct a socialist alternative. His forthcoming book is titled The Contradictions of Real Socialism, The Conductor and the Conducted.